Well, good morning, everybody. It's lovely to be here today. And I was given a choice of psalms, so now you know what my favourite psalm is. And there are two things that I love about Psalm 139. I love the beauty of the poetry, and I love the beauty of the truth that's enshrined in it. I've loved it for a very long time. When I was a child, I had a Sunday school prize, which was based on verses 9 and 10 of this psalm. And the words of it, in of course the old King James version of the Bible, have echoed round my head ever since. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. I lost the book years ago, and when I got hold of a copy recently, I found I didn't remember anything at all about the story. But that verse has always stayed with me, in all its beauty and with all it means. Well, of course, there's a lot more to Psalm 139 than just verses 9 and 10, but for me they are the pivot around which the other verses turn. And whether it's good news for us or bad news depends on our relationship with God at the time of reading. It seems to me that the psalm falls into five sections. The way it's set out in our Bibles suggests there are only four. You may want to look at it. There's loads of Bibles around. Open it in the middle, as Trevor says, and you'll quickly find Psalm 139. It's laid out in four sections in the NIV. And this seems to be generally the accepted way of looking at it. The commentary I consulted by Michael Wilcock has very neat titles for those sections. So verses 1 to 5, How God Knows Me. Verses 7 to 12, How God Surrounds Me. Verses 13 to 18, How He Has Made Me. And verses 19 to 24, How He Tests Me. I thought those were neat. I've adopted them for sermon sections, but I've also added an extra one because to my mind, How He Tests Me is really only verses 23 and 24, and I've called verses 19 to 22 the difficult bit. So first, verses 1 to 5, How God Knows Me. God's knowledge of me is total. My thoughts, my actions, my circumstances. Not only does he know what I do, he also knows what I think. He knows what I'm about to say, which is sometimes a very daunting thought. He doesn't know it in the sort of way that Tim might know what I'm about to say, because I always say that in that particular circumstance. He knows it because he's outside time and he sees past, present and future all simultaneously and as a whole in a way that we can't really imagine. And yet, still in a way which we can't imagine, he gives me free will. He knows whether or not I'm about to say something outrageous, but I still have the choice. It's very strange. I'm not a robot. I'm not obliged to say the words that he has foreknown. There may be times when I'd like to wriggle out of the responsibility. Well, I couldn't help saying it because God knew I was going to. But it's not an option. It's very amazing. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. That's not supposed to give us claustrophobia. It's not that kind of hemming in. It's that the protective, loving care of God is all around us, enveloping us on every side. And better than that, he lays his hand upon us. A touch of affection, of empowerment, of blessing. Such intimacy from the Lord of all the universe. And the psalmist knows that mere words, however beautiful, can't make sense of God for us. If we could understand God with our tiny minds, he would be as small as we are. So many of our doctrines seem to be contradictory. Free will, but also predestination. One God, who is yet three persons. A God who is not bound by space and time. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. The next section, how God surrounds me. The psalmist now explores what it means to be hemmed in, behind and before. There is no escaping God. He takes the knowledge that God is everywhere and he brings it vividly to life by visualizing himself, visiting every location and verifying that, yes, God is there too. Up in the heavens, yes, he's there. Down in the depths, he's there too. Swooping from dawn in the east to the far side of the sea in the west, he finds God is there at every point. And not only there, but guiding him and holding him fast by the hand. If he tries to hide in the darkness, as wrongdoers often do. No good God can see in the dark. He makes the night to shine like the day, a foreshadowing of Jesus, who is the light of the world. And is this scary or is it wonderful, the knowledge that we can never get away from God? I guess it depends on where we are on our faith journey. To the person who desperately doesn't want God to exist, that's scary that he's everywhere, if they believe it. But for those of us who are already God's children, is there ever a time when we'd like to get away from him? Maybe if we've done something of which we're deeply ashamed, we'd like a place to hide, rather than facing up to what we've done and asking God's forgiveness. But I think that at any other time, it's a wonderful thing to know that nothing, as St. Paul puts it, can separate us from the love of God. That's not to say that we can always feel that love. As you may know by now, I'm someone who's grappled a lot with depression over the years. And I know well that there are many, many times when God seems not to be there. And at other times, when I'm feeling vulnerable, I may shut him off because I need to keep him at arm's length because I simply can't cope with all that love. He understands. He knows me. But it's still wonderful to know in my head that my feelings don't alter the fact that he is all around me and has his hand upon me. I think that for those of us who have suffered abuse of one kind or another, it's desperately hard sometimes to believe that God was there when that happened. I remember the Children's Society putting out a figure that 1 in 8 adults had been abused in some way or other as children, either physically or sexually or psychologically or bullied or whatever. That means there's probably, shall we say, 4 of us in this room on average and maybe more who have been abused. I'm one of them. And there was a time when I could not sing songs like "All My Life You Have Been Faithful," "All my life you have been oh so good," because inside I was yelling, "So where were you then and why didn't you stop it happening?" And I couldn't believe that a God of love could let that happen. And yes, I knew him. And he gave me a vision once. "Where were you when that happened?" And he said, "You know where I was. Right beside you, hanging on the cross, dying for you and for the person who did that to you. All my life you have been faithful. All my life you have been, oh, so good." And the fact that he sees my life from the outside and as a whole makes that easier to accept, because he knew he was going to bring me out of that miry pit and set my feet upon a rock. Verses 13 to 18, how God has made me. God is my creator and yours, my, your creator, inside and out. And his knowledge of me encompasses my whole life and predates my birth. He didn't wait for me to be viable or anything like that before he started loving me. He was there from the beginning. I love that picture of being knit together in my mother's womb, woven together in the depths of the earth. Thine eyes beheld my unformed substance. I love that God made me and saw me even before I was formed. I love that my life in God's eyes is not a meaningless series of transformed events, but a complete story which was all written down in his book before I even gave my first cry. That loving care was around me even at my worst moments. It will go with me into the valley of the shadow of death, and glory of glories, when I awake, I will still be with him. So verses 19 to 22, the difficult bit. Often omitted when the psalm is read in public worship, we all agreed together, we weren't missing out bits of the Bible today. They certainly don't form part of either of the hymns I know, which are based on this psalm. You may know them too. The Victorian hymn, Search Me, O God, My Actions Try, by Francis Bottom. And the contemporary new one, O God, You Search Me and You Know Me, by Bernadette Farrell, which is beautiful. I guess it's not too surprising that they miss those verses out. We wouldn't be comfortable singing, If Only God You Would Slay the Wicked. Be a bit too like the Marseillaise, wouldn't it really? But one of the things that I love about the Psalms is that they encompass the whole gamut of human experience and emotion. Are you overflowing with joy? Psalm 100 is there to help you express it. Do you need comfort and reassurance? Try looking at Psalm 23. Have you done something you know to be completely wrong and abhorrent to God? Psalm 51 says it all. And if you're raging furious about what's going on in your life or in the world around you, these verses from Psalm 139 may well express what you're feeling much more honestly than sometimes we're prepared to do it ourselves. And sometimes I wonder whether in our attempts to live up to God's standards, we end up simply being rather wishy-washy. We're so afraid of being unchristian that we don't allow ourselves to have feelings. We mask our true feelings. Can we honestly say we've never thought it'd be a good idea if God struck somebody or other dead? C.S. Lewis found verse 19, If Only God You Would Slay the Wicked, rather comical. He said, it's as if it were surprising that such a simple remedy for human ills had not occurred to the Almighty. But I don't view it as me giving advice to God. I view it as me desperately wanting the war between Russia and the Ukraine to stop, and to stop right now. And I can't see how God's going to stop it while Putin is alive. So yes, I have thought, God, why don't you just drop a little thunderbolt? But then what do I know? He's the Almighty. He knows what he's up to. And the psalmist's desire for the death of the wicked is actually, in a way, an expression of his devotion to God. Your adversaries misuse your name. Things are being done in the name of Almighty God, which are totally contrary to his will and his nature. Watch the news, read the news. They're calling on his name, and it's not his love. We may, in our more rational moments, recognize that as Christians, it's our duty to love the sinner and hate the sin. We know that's what we should be doing. But moments of strong emotion are not famed for being rational. In our attempts to sanitize this psalm and make it comfortable to read, let's be careful not to sanitize our feelings to the extent of not really caring very much. And then finally, verses 23 and 24, how God tests me. So the Psalms started with the recognition that God has searched me and knows me. It continued with the recognition that wherever I go, up, down, side to side, darkness or light, God is there and his guiding hand is upon me. So why does the psalmist now ask God to search him and guide him? Well, the answer is that having recognized as a fact that God knows him through and through and is ever present with him, he now actively invites God to search him and guide him. God knows it all already, but now as I echo these words, it's with my permission, at my request, my longing even, that he'll do that. My desire is for him to shine his light into the dark places in my heart and reveal them to me as well. See if there is any offensive way in me. My desire is for him to remove all that is bad and lead me into all that is good. And the psalmist is not just talking about wrongdoing. It's very relevant to this day and age that he asks God to look at his anxious thoughts. Because never has there been an era when anxiety has been so prevalent as in this current age. And here's another area where we as Christians may be tempted to cover up. You know, I grew up knowing that there was no need for Christians to be anxious because they cast their burden upon the Lord and he would sustain them. And I grew up knowing that I had to come to Jesus if I labored and was heavy laden and he would give me rest. And I grew up knowing that only bad Christians would ever be anxious. It was not a good way to think because I didn't know that a lot of the depression I was suffering was anxiety, which I couldn't admit because I was supposed to have given it to God and he would have dealt with all that. This psalm speaks to us at the deepest and most intimate level of God's love for us, his care for us, his knowledge of us through and through, as individuals, not just as a world. He is a God who knew everything about us before we had ever been born. He is a God who knows what we are up against now and who knows what tomorrow will bring. He is a God who is entirely realistic about our imperfection, who likes us to be honest with him, and who sent Jesus to deal with it after we've been honest. He's a God who brings light into our darkness and whose hand will guide us and hold us fast. And when we awake, we will still be with him. Lord, I thank you for this psalm and for all you have taught me through it. Search me and know me and see if there be any wicked way and lead me in the way everlasting. Amen.